a counselor, a coach, and a spiritual director walk into a bar. What comes next is either the greatest punchline of all time or a conversational cocktail that could change your life forever. Jake, Liz, and John are offering you a unique three-way perspective on common mental, emotional, and spiritual struggles. Only you know which perspective you need the most. So grab your favorite beverage, listen in, and decide who you're gonna call.
Hello, and welcome back to the podcast, Who You Gonna Call? I am your host this evening, Elizabeth Sines. I am a life coach for Catholic Wives, and I am joined by my co-host, Jacob Kunkalix, who is a counselor, and John Malloy, who is a spiritual director. And this is the, I guess, technically fourth episode in a series that we're doing on sort of an introduction to coaching, counseling, and spiritual direction. And tonight, we've already been through John spiritually directing me, and me coaching Jacob. And tonight we're going to hear Jacob step into his role as counselor and counsel. Is that the right word? Counsel John.
Therapize.
Therapeutize.
Heal.
There we go. It's perfect. Well, hold on a second. John's like, I don't need healing. What? So sort of the rules of this little game here is that John has to bring something real, because we've all been bringing real things. We want you guys to actually see what it feels like to be coached, counseled, or spiritually directed. And so we're all bringing something real to the table that the person who is the expert in the field is able to lead us through and work with us on. And the idea behind this concept is that, a lot of the time, maybe we don't want to look for help with other people because we're scared and because of the unknown. And we're trying to take away the unknown portion. This is what it looks like. These are real sessions that we're giving you guys live and, recorded, but you're seeing it, as it is. And so tonight, one rule that we've kind of given ourselves is that if anybody gets uncomfortable with the level of vulnerability, they are allowed to say they are not comfortable sharing anymore. So if at any point John wants to gracefully bow out from Jacob's questioning, he's allowed to do that. So how are you guys feeling about this? You ready?
I'm looking forward to this.
I'm looking forward to it. I just get to watch.
I just want to add a few notes, though, just so that everyone knows. This is an example of a particular flavor. Mm. So when you're hearing Liz, John, and I practice our professions, don't think that that's what every coach, spiritual director, counselor is going to be like. Mm. This is just an example, and hopefully you can take away some principles or take away some insights to, like, okay, this is kind of the format of what this looks like. But to expect a Jacob or a John or, a Liz into every other therapist won't be as accurate. And that's okay, because you don't want copycats. There's a beauty in flavors. And the second thing is, I don't want you to be passive listeners. I want to see if you guys can take away with, what's your takeaways, and then what did you notice? So you kind of stuck out to you. Okay.
Awesome. Cool. And we're going to take about, our goal is 15 to 17 minutes. John was beautiful and had it done. He had spiritual direction done within 15 minutes. Jacob and I chatted a little longer and got it to 25. So somewhere between 15 and 25 minutes.
Do I hear five?
John's like speed demon in this counseling session. Okay. So I will let you take it away, Jacob.
Great. Awesome. All right, John. What brings you to counseling?
So there's a couple of things. I don't know if they're connected, but I'm sure you'll help me figure that out. Recently, I've noticed that, so in my work, there's a lot of projects, a lot of managements of people. And in those interactions with people, sometimes there are tensions being received through email or phone, or I've done a misstep, or I perceive I've done a misstep, and or I need to address something that someone else has done. And there's this inertia to do what I know I need to do, like reach out and say, hey, here's where we need to go. Mm-hmm. Here's what needs to happen. Or here's the correction that needs to happen, or addressing issues. Like there's a delay. Okay. There's a putting it off for a really long time until finally I'm just fed up with it. Or there's a due date. And it's like, okay, I just need to do this thing. And it's like, oh, that wasn't that bad. Mm-hmm. So this has recently come up in a couple of projects that I'm on where I've needed to, be transparent with some project managers and some leads, and nothing bad. Just like, here's the status of this particular mm-hmm. project. It's not going smooth and swimmingly. When those happen, it's like, this is great. It's going fine. It's when there's like, it's not going well. Yeah. I'm not sure what to do. That's when the thing is, like, okay. I don't want to reach out. And so this happened recently, and it had me wondering, well, this does happen an awful lot and I'm tired of it. And then in dealing with another group mm-hmm. of people on a similar thing, I'm needing to address them and make some corrective action. Nothing huge, but there does need to be a more firm mm-hmm. approach from me than perhaps has already been established in my relationship okay. with them. And there's just like this not terrific feeling inside. Like, I just don't want to do it. I don't want to be the bad guy. There's mm-hmm. fear. Like, there's just a lot of tangle in there. So.
Okay. Okay. So what I'm hearing you say is that in your work, when you have to deliver some level of either bad news or direct, more of a direct instruction, that would come off as, it would fluffle feathers. There seems to be a resistance or a particular fear that goes into it, or at least there's tension.
Yeah. And sometimes it is that I'm going to upset them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's I messed up, or okay. I potentially messed up, or I'm not sure where this is going to go because it's not going smoothly like I think it's supposed to when I say, here's my report for this particular project or thing.
Okay. Can you describe to me this tension that you feel when you're, let's say, approaching the due date of having to send this?
It's kind of not wanting to do it.
Okay.
It's a fear that something is going to happen. Like, I'm going to be thought of less.
Okay.
That I'm not competent. It's going to reflect on my competence. It's going to feed into my confidence in what I'm doing, which will then, in my thoughts, spiral myself out into, well, no, I really am incompetent in this particular thing.
Okay.
So I don't want to do it.
So it's the fear of being seen as incompetent.
Yes.
Okay. Let's do something real quick. Let's follow that thought for a moment. Let's say that happens. Let's say that actually turns into, yep, you're actually incompetent. What would that mean for you?
What would that mean for me if I'm incompetent? I wouldn't feel terrifically good. I don't think I would be given further responsibility. I wouldn't be able to prove myself. I guess there'd be some self-beating up.
Okay.
Like, I should have known this. And I don't like the talking about myself behind my back, whether it's perceived or actual real, like, I don't know, the water cooler talk, like, oh, can you believe that guy? Did you hear what, you know, this thing was screwed up, or that part really bothers me and I don't want to be the subject of it. And I feel like an incompetence piece would provide a story to talk about in negative light. And then when people see me, it's, oh, you're the screw up.
Yep. Okay. So there would seem then significant criticism from others and even from yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's say you are the topic of criticism, of scrutiny, and they see you as a screw up. What would that mean for you if that were to happen?
I wouldn't be effective. I wouldn't be able to engage in work freely. By freely, like in my own perception of it, I guess.
Okay. Can you unpack that a little bit more?
Well, like second guessing myself, like, was this the right move? Mm-hmm. Is this going to be the right move? Is this the thing that's going to get me, I guess, fired or tripped up, or like now I'm kind of relegated to the corner, or what do they do with a problem like Maria kind of thing, mm-hmm. but except it's John? Because I've seen this play out too, where someone is incompetent and all of the thing is, well, we can't fire the guy or girl, so let's just give them menial tasks and keep them busy and out of trouble.
Okay.
And I'm sure that doesn't feel good for that person to know I have nothing to do. I'm literally sitting here in this office or sitting here in this position. And yeah, that's just not what I want to be associated with.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that if they criticize you and see you as a screw up, it would mean that you actually are reduced to someone who they can't fire but don't want to use for important projects. Okay.
Yeah. Dead weight.
Dead weight. All right. So you become dead weight. All right. Mm-hmm. John, guess what? You're dead weight. What would that mean for you?
I would hate my job.
Okay.
I would be unsatisfied with the position, with the thing that I'm doing. I would, I guess, drag through whatever thing I'm doing, knowing that I am dead weight, being reinforced by the things I'm seeing. And move on potentially to something else. But that would be a thing I'd probably carry into the next piece. Like, am I going to be dead weight here?
Okay. So it seems like that would start spinning into seeing yourself as, whether or not you see yourself as valuable in your work.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the significance of that for you? To want to be, not even in the context of an egotistical, I want to be the top dog, but to be dependable, to be someone, what would that mean for you if that was the case, that you weren't seen as a valuable worker?
What would it mean if I'm not seen as a valuable worker? Is that is that what you just asked? That I'm not, like, what's the point of me doing the thing? Like, I always want to do the best.
Okay. So can I make an observation then? Because it would seem like then this tension that you experience is driven from this idea that you want to achieve the best or become or be the best and be seen as a valuable worker in some capacity, let's say, that when you are seen as incompetent, or you admit a mistake, or you have to address a situation, and you're criticized, that perception of yourself is challenged. It's not just incident; it's a fundamental challenge of how you see yourself. Uh-huh. Somewhere in the ballpark?
Yeah, I enjoy being seen and known, and experiencing competence, and I can do the thing. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean I'm getting accolades and like my name's all over the front papers or everything, but just he's dependable. He can get stuff done. He works through it. He's hardworking. Mm-hmm. And being dead weight would be the complete opposite of that. Mm-hmm. And it would define me.
It would define
everything else. Yeah.
Okay. So for sure, there's multiple ways to go about this, but I'm a big advocate for exposure. So what would you say to the fact, to the idea of not intentionally doing something, messing up? I mean, you don't want to mess up in your job, but exposing yourself more willingly to be criticized. Because what I'm noticing anyways is like there's that attachment to that level of belief that you want to be seen and valued. But it would seem like that's dependable on others, right? So it seems like there's a consequential experience that happens that determine whether or not you're valuable versus whether or not you believe it yourself. Now, obviously, that's a complexity to where it would seem like you do believe in yourself. You've achieved, you know, incredible goals in your job.
Until until a risk is needed.
Mm.
And I'm on that precipice of I need to make a decision. And I have either I'll take the risk and the risk of failure right now to make sure I'm getting the, I don't know, making a decision, or I'm going to go analyze everything to make sure I made the right decision.
So it seemed like the analytical part of you is your way to avoid the decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mitigate the risk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Look at all the different angles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if, like you were asking, exposure and failing, I would have already thought through, okay, this is how this could fail, and here's how I'm going to react. Mm-hmm. And I've already dealt with those feelings, so that when it happens, yeah, already did it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's, okay, so you can process that through and say, okay, yeah, this is the likely outcome. But the kicker is that's never guaranteed, and the kicker is it's like you can't control what people will say and do. And so if anything, and again, obviously if we had more time, and something that I would work with you, if we would continue doing this, is to definitely work with your body to set up an intentional exercise. Okay, so like the homework would be to go ahead and set a time and date to send that email. But while you do that, you know, I have here, in holding my hands, a comb.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I'm a big advocate for engaging your body to ground yourself. Okay.
Okay.
So essentially to disrupt and disprove those negative thoughts and that negative belief of yourself that your worth is dependent on what other people say and do, is that you have to go into the fray and take the risk. But if you do it without, let's say, tools or without things to kind of ground you and regulate that tension in your body that you noticed earlier, mm-hmm. you're going to spiral. So typically it's when you set up, okay, I'm going to send this email. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and make this jump. And I'm going to unintentionally, unintentionally, see my, you know, be honest with my, you know, my mistake or owning up to it. That tension is going to be definitely experiencing your body. So you're going to want to, you know, deep breathing, but ground yourself. And usually a comb or ice or a stress ball will tell your body this is safe. Because right now that tension seems like this is dangerous. And that's what's happening right now, is that there's that fear, and that fear triggers that fight or flight response. And your body's going to go into one of those fight, flight, or freeze response. And it's going to go into that. So in order for you to actually achieve the exercise to then actually be able to disrupt that negative thinking, you're going to need to tell your body that, hey, it's okay.
Okay. So just to recap then, when I'm sending this email or the next time I have this tension, this inertia to do the thing, release it somehow through a body...
Hmm?
Through a body association or something like that? Like
so
a comb or
something squeezing, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Huh. With hearing all that, I want to hear your thoughts and reactions to this prospect of this risk. What are you noticing right now?
It's a very simple exercise to, I guess, intentionally engage in the next time.
Mm-hmm.
I have the situation, which will probably be tomorrow, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's just with email. If I'm in a meeting where I'm needing to be more confrontational or firm and assertive, how would that work? That's what's coming to my mind.
Okay. How do you think it would work? How would you want it to work?
I wouldn't want to let off that I'm tense or struggling, or I wouldn't want my inner wrestling to affect the relationship and the position that I'm supposed to hold in that particular mm-hmm. meeting, let's say,
mm-hmm.
Which I feel like having a stress ball and, you know, like pumping it would relay something that would then undermine and like be a self-fulfilling prophecy in mm-hmm. some sense.
Sure. When we go into those tense situations, we're holding on to something. So I would invite you, and I'm wondering if you could speak to that now, as to like, what would you be holding on to that's maybe getting in the way of you actually doing your job?
Safety.
Mm.
Image. Mm-hmm. Image of confidence and competence.
Okay. So what would need to replace that attachment, let's say? Because it's that attachment that is in that's sparking that fear response. I need to hold on to this. I can't let this go. And if this happens, boom, 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 we just went down that ladder. So what would you need to replace that thought or that perception with?
What's coming to mind is just taking the risk, just moving forward and being okay with that.
Mm-hmm. What would be, rather than telling yourself, well, I want to be seen as competent, what would be a more realistic, more achievable, you know, perspective that you can hold on to, or at least believe at going into that situation?
I actually don't know.
Guesses?
Holding on to instead of the attachment to competence.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know.
Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. So the other day, I gave my students a midterm test. And at the beginning, I gave them the invitations. Like, look, I know right now this is suffering. The anticipation of this and the fear of not doing well is suffering for you. But I'm going to encourage you to, however you do, make a choice to however you do in this test, that you walk away knowing that you gave your best, knowing that, you know, find a meaning in it to hold on to rather than in the anticipation and the fear of doing well or not well. You know, so you shift the meaning of the experience from something that is causing anxiety to something that can give you a sense of confidence and belief in your own self-worth.
Uh-huh.
So I'm wondering what that perception would be for you.
What's coming to mind right now is just that this is a learning experience. Mm. So if this is the wrong thing, I have learned from, or I will learn from it, and I'll be better in the future for it.
Hmm. So this, you win or you learn.
Yeah. Yeah. There's not necessarily loss, but that probably has some more unpacking in some sense,
sure.
But not right now, probably.
Before we sign off here, what are you noticing right now?
Just a little new perspective, like an actual tool to go into writing the email, mm-hmm. or approaching the meetings,
mm-hmm.
and doing that with some intentionality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great. And emotionally, what are you noticing?
Intrigue.
Yeah.
Yeah, intrigue. Like, what more could... Yeah, digging deeper. Like, if this was longer, I'd be like, you know what?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let's dig a little bit deeper.
Oh, yeah.
So
there's a lot we can
do. So intrigue.
About. Great. Awesome. Alrighty, and scene.
It was not rehearsed, ladies and gentlemen. It was not rehearsed. That was so good, guys. I really enjoyed that. I've got like a whole page of thoughts and notes, and I was like, woo. But first, I want to hear you guys. What did you think? John, what did you feel about all this? You've been asked so much what you think and feel this evening. But
it was very natural and not not scary.
Mm.
Like, Jacob, that was just a way of you interacting and approaching that felt safe and not like confrontational and just like teasing it out. Mm-hmm. And I really mean that it does intrigue me that I would want to go deeper and more into some of this to see what else there could be with it, or just what other tips do I need to do?
Sure.
So, yeah.
I love that you ended with that word intrigue, by the way. I was like, how fun to be able to look at your own interior life and want to know more instead of looking at it with fear or with doubt or any of those emotions, but to actually go like, ooh, what's going on down there?
And it could just be the nerd in me like,
that's definitely John. That's
John. Got a little bit of a treasure hunt experience. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. How about you, Jake?
No, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. I kind of felt a little bit, not choppy, by the beginning and the end, because I'm like, there's a whole like rhythm that I usually pick up with my clients, and I do like a social phase, the couple first minutes, and so I'm like, all right, John, we're gonna go right to it, and I'm like, okay, that's not usually how fast I do things. But I was like, well, let's just jump in and get to the meat of it. And then when I got, you know, when I saw Liz, your 5-minute warning, I'm like, crap. I'm like,
that went by. So that wasn't just me like, wow, that was already?
Okay. Yeah. I have a little confession to make. I got startled. Second. I got startled by my timer and I thought I had missed my moment. I didn't start it right away. I was so distracted, guys. I was so focused on you. So I think I actually cut you off a little short, but luckily you kept going. And then I just didn't say anything else. Cause I was like, no, just keep going. You guys
that
are fine.
Makes sense.
But I didn't want to like keep sending you messages.
That's so funny. Yeah. I thought that was a really fast 5 minutes. And then I was like, okay, well, that's a long 5 minutes now.
Don't ever let me time anything ever again. I am not focused enough.
You said at the beginning, it felt choppy and just diving right in. I actually appreciated that.
You did.
Because I'm not one for small talk.
Okay.
Because I can tell it's small talk and pointless.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going anywhere. And there's an actual thing that we're going to talk about. So why don't we just get to the talking about it instead of like, well, how's the weather over you? It's fine. That's not what you're actually wanting right now.
No, yeah,
that makes me super uncomfortable too. I agree with that. That like when people are starting out just like chit chatty, but I know they have something important to tell me. Like whether it's a boss or your spouse or a friend, it's just like, just hop right to it. Let's just.
Now I have to be like, you think this, if any of my clients are listening to this, let me know.
We can be social afterwards. I will totally tell you about my dog and my, you know, I don't know, the flowers I'm growing afterwards.
I had a client once who said like, so Jake, do you say happy whatever day it is to everyone? Because I usually start off. Happy Monday, happy Wednesday, happy Friday.
Cute. That's awesome. I love it. So I wanted to say, I think I had multiple things that I wanted to say about this, but I think one of the things that I was really interested in, Jake, was how deep you went. Like, it felt like every time John said something, you wanted to go beyond that something. And yet somehow it circled back to the first thing he said. Like, his fear of incompetence, it kind of came all the way back, but it was like this fear of being seen as incompetence and then this sort of worst case scenario and then I'm a screw up and then this evidence of how this could happen to me. Like you just kept unpacking, but it ultimately led back to this other belief. And it was just, I was watching it going like, wow, how deep can he go? There's still more questions. So it's just really cool. And I did want to ask you a little bit more about grounding. With this, like with the comb and with the stress ball and just like, can you explain a little bit more behind that for me? Because it's just, I don't know. It was just like, I was like, a comb, what's the comb for?
Yeah.
Likewise.
That was the Holy Spirit, because I just saw the comb. I saw playing with it. I'm like, oh, here's a practical tool for you to use. And I'm like, bingo. So it's understanding the principles of how our body and minds work with each other, and how our emotions specifically are experienced in our bodies. Okay. So a lot of times, and you know, John, I'm sure you started noticing, but like I kept asking, like, what are you noticing? And asking like, what was the sensation of the tension? Because when it comes to the practical application of how do I manage my anxiety, my fear, like all this emotion it has to be finding ways to work with your body, because that's where the emotions are. So understanding that basis of how we function, it's then, okay, yeah, we got to understand the beliefs, but we have to kind of work in tangent with the body as to, okay, yeah, you need to go in with a different perspective and remind yourself cognitively, like CBT, cognitive behavior therapy, will teach you that. But we also can't forget that your body's sending you signals, right? The body's taking all this information, right, through your five senses, and it's telling you danger, danger, danger. And so you kind of have to not turn it off. You don't want to take the batteries off, because it's good to be anxious when we need to. If there's a bear chasing you, you better pray that you're
anxious. Please feel anxious. You're anxious.
So you can run, okay? But you have to train your body to when it's perceiving danger. And I think part of that intrigue, John, maybe is to like, how did it get to a place where I'm seeing this as dangerous, or I'm seeing this as a threat, that I'm seeing this as I need to get out. And that's
this whole
that's,
room is full of bears. All of these people are bears.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, again, I think that's the deeper work, I would say. But when it's in the here and now, it's like, okay, I need to train my mind, but I need to train my body to restructure itself. And from a neurological standpoint, right, you have these neural pathways that are created through, you know, like brushing your teeth, for example. Like, that's a learned behavior that you do it over and over and over again. It becomes a habit because that neural pathway was created. So the same thing with physical behavior, that if I keep telling my body, hey, it's safe, hey, it's safe, hey, it's safe, and I'm doing that by grounding. And grounding is more of a, I'm here in the moment. A lot of the anxious thoughts will take you out of the moment. So here in the moment is going to bring you some sense of like relief. Or at least give you the ability to then be able to your prefrontal cortex, which shuts down during anxiety, is that when you ground yourself, it actually allows that part of your brain to think rationally, to open up. Mm. You know, so if I need to come in with a more cognitive awareness, but my body is responding out of fear, you're not going to think clearly anyways. So you have to work with your body to regulate it. So.
Is there a danger of grounding becoming almost a nervous tic, though, if it becomes sort of your safety zone? I'm just curious.
It can, I suppose, in one sense of the word, as to how you're utilizing it. Mm-hmm. I would look at nervous tics in relationship to, let's say, again, this is just my two cents. I'm not saying this is what the research has shown, but if someone were to come with a tic, particularly to the fact of I use it to cope, it's a coping mechanism. It's not necessarily grounding.
Okay.
And so there's a distinction that I'm doing this to avoid a particular reaction, where grounding is giving you the ability to actually face the danger.
I see. So grounding is more reminding you of the reality of the situation versus a coping mechanism would be sort of hiding from the situation somehow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A coping is more of either a denial, a rebellion, or an avoidance. And again, I'm not saying that I haven't had anyone with tics particularly, so I can't, from that, but if let's say someone would come in, I would assess as to like how they're using it, because if it's a neurological, like a theological, theological, but if it's just a reaction of the body, where it's like, okay, yeah, like that's part of it, that's one thing. But if you're using it to get out of the situation, to absorb the blast, then we need to work on other ways.
Okay. Okay. Because we'll talk about that a little bit in coaching with, I have a coach who, when she says, when you're anxious, to like rub your arm or your neck, because if you were actually in danger, you wouldn't take the time to do those things. So you're giving your body that, you know, that clear message of like, you're fine. You're fine. You're rubbing your neck. You're clearly not running from anything.
Yeah. Well, ice. That's another one. I don't know if I mentioned that, but like, try to hold a piece of ice. Your brain can't be anxious and hold a piece of ice.
Well, it might be anxious for a different reason.
you'll be in pain, but that's grounding.
Cold and miserable.
Yeah.
But you can't really do that in a meeting. Like, I have ice.
I'm all wet.
Suddenly everyone's like, John, why are you holding ice?
Don't worry about it. At least I'm not anxious. Do you want
Have you listened to episode 12 of our podcast?
You're getting anxious, John, or wet, John? You got to pick.
About that. Huh. Now I'm anxious about being wet. Great.
Back to therapy.
Oh my gosh, so funny. So the other thing I have to just say really fast that I loved was at one point John asked the question, how would that work about the comb? And you instantly turned it around and asked him that question. And it just made me so happy. I was like, oh, it's like Jesus.
Right, yeah. How would it work with the comb? How would it work with the comb?
How do you think?
It made me think of in coaching sometimes, you know, a client will say, I don't know, like an answer to a question. And our question is always, if you did know, what would you do? Because it turns back on that creative problem solving part of your brain, because saying I don't know shuts it down. So that's what you made me think of when you were like, how would that work? I'm like,
Well, and I use like, and a lot of times when people do, when they say like, I don't know, I'm like, well, if you had to guess, just don't have a guess. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest with you, John. And I think it was instinctive. So, and I think it's because of the rapport, but that's the kicker. I appreciate when clients resist and ask. Mm-hmm. Rather than make assumptions and rather than just go, kind of go with it, like, Jake, I actually don't know how this works. Actually, Jake, I kind of disagree with you. Or like, Jake, I kind of feeling uncomfortable right now. Like, I love those conversations because that actually continues to really get deeper to what's going on underneath. So the fact that you're willing to ask, I would say, is part of the process of the therapeutic experience. So, you know, for those listeners, like, it's okay to challenge your therapist and ask them for clarification because that builds the trust. So,
yeah,
I'll point that out.
Awesome.
Nice.
That's awesome. I'd imagine it would also help you get to the root better. Like if you're just blindly saying that you agree with everything that your therapist says, but you don't actually, then you're not going to get that healing. So you kind of need to have that vulnerability of like, actually, I totally disagree with you and I think you're wrong. And kind of let that all get out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the built up relationship through these, through these podcasts helped this be, I guess, less bare facing, I guess. Whereas if it was like brand new therapist, I probably would not have asked that, or I probably wouldn't have. You've mentioned trust before. I trust you in these conversations, and so I could share something and push back or even question. If it was brand new person, I probably wouldn't be there yet. Which
indicates then you need time to build that trust.
Yep.
You know, with any three of these professions, right? You need that.
Yeah.
Because I firmly believe that there's this book called Gift of Therapy, and I ask and I tell like anyone who's wanting to become a therapist to read it. The guy who wrote it, the author, he termed it the grist for the mill. So you have the content, which is like the stuff we talked about, but then you have the process, which is, I feel like, a lot more profound sometimes, you know? Like I had, and I have suddenly seen this a couple of times already in the last couple of weeks where a few of my clients would say like, I'll ask them to take a challenge or to just kind of be a little bit like challenged and be more open and vulnerable. And they're like, I'm afraid to. How come? Because I'm afraid that you'll judge me. And I challenge them like, okay, you know what? Like, got it. Get it. That makes sense. But let's not make assumptions. You know, let's go ahead and say, Jake, I'm afraid you're going to judge me. Will you judge me? You know, and let's have a conversation about that. Because what that does is that it actually helps them learn to be vulnerable and to actually tangibly kind of get into that level of trust that, yeah, don't make assumptions, ask, inquire, and be honest. I love when clients are just raw and honest about things. About therapy, about the content, but even like about me. And it's humbling. I mean, it's humbling because some of it is like, I had one client who's like, I think you're kind of pushing me a little bit too fast. You know, can we slow down? It's like, okay. Yeah. Thank you. Like I need to know that for me to better be present to you. So there's a lot that goes on in therapy, as we've already seen, but yeah. Pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Huh. Obviously, this was a very short. I'm not sure how short because we got a 5-minute warning. I know. 2 minutes, and it was like 20 minutes after that.
I am not to be trusted. Speaking of trust, I was like just listening. I'm like, wow.
So, where if this was a full length session, where do you think it would have gone or where would it go? Like, I kept waiting for, like, the seek and destroy missiles to come in, like, and Jake has shown up and he's pinpointed the thing and we're going to destroy
it. Hunt for Red October.
Yes.
So it's interesting because I'm developing this idea. Not like I'm developing, it's like it's a new thing, but I'm noticing that there's a pattern that I usually kind of choose to go in. Because I would say that for you and I, John, it would be, okay, where did those beliefs come from? You know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, that is the kind of the extension into like the past. And maybe not, it doesn't even have to be traumatic. It could just simply be experiences that come up that, which is interesting enough, because again, part of that emotional, the science behind the emotions is that there's something in the past that has emotionally happened, right? So big T trauma, or little, what we call little T trauma, you know, it's something significant emotionally has happened that if it's not processed, talked about, validated, and worked through, that your emotional brain can't tell time. And so if it's not processed, 20 years later, something within that vicinity is triggered, or let's say it is brought up, your brain is going to live out as if it's living 20 years back in history, because it can't tell time. And so part of the grounding, part of the restructuring of the thoughts, and to then challenge them by actually doing the exercise, is to essentially create a new core memory, you know, using Inside Out, but to create a new kind of recreating the history where, like, okay, like the past is the past now. I can actually separate emotionally from the past, and therefore I don't have to live in that emotion. So I would think then part of the process with you, John, once we got past some of the practical skills of, okay, yeah, you got meetings we got to attend to, let's learn how to ground and change some thoughts, would to be able to evaluate, okay, where is this coming from? Let's go to it and actually let's tell the narrative. And because emotions are housed in the body, and because emotions can be validated as if you're living them as if it just happened, we can literally go back and validate that emotion. So therefore, it actually, it's part of your history, but now it's not part of you in the here and now. An example would be, you know, many, many times I'll take clients back to those situations, and a lot of time it's trauma related, and have my clients, okay, you know, you're experiencing that, you know, this is happening to you. What do you need? What did you needed then? Well, I needed to shout out, you know, I needed to express this anger towards my perpetrator. Great, do it. You know, and that verbalization, that behavior is activating that, that agency that usually will then help you disconnect and say to the brain, hey, that's in the past. So that's kind of where we might have been going. Because those beliefs don't come from somewhere, don't come from thin air. They come from somewhere, and usually it's experiences or multiple experiences piled up.
Yeah. I think that's part of the intrigue was, I feel like there would be more if there was time, including going to perhaps other memories that pop up as perhaps related to that.
Yeah.
And what that would look like in a real session.
Yeah.
Or this was kind of a real session, but like a full session with within a context of perhaps other sessions.
And what I was doing in the beginning, so like that list of questions is what it's a specific technique, what we call the downward arrow. So you start with the thought, the anxious automatic thought, and you trace it down to what we call the core belief. So usually you have, and this is again more of a CBT model, but you have this idea that I have my automatic thoughts, but they're always going to be coming from a deeper core belief. And a lot of times core beliefs relate to this perception of self. I'm worthless. I have no value, you know? And so then once we get to that core belief, then the question would be, and I was leading up to it, and again, because of timing, one of the questions I was prepared to ask was, okay, where did that belief come from? Not necessarily the thoughts, but where did that core belief come from? You know, and a lot of times it's experiences and a list of experiences. And I would tell my clients to create a list and we'll just go through those experiences.
So what you're describing sounds a bit like, Liz, what you were doing with coaching in some sense in emotions and thoughts and that interplay.
Yeah, yeah. Coaching is based on a CBT model. So starting with that thought and then working through those experiences and emotions. Yeah.
Now, I'll make this distinction. And again, this is something that I was trained in the context of the CBT, that like it's a good model to go with. But I think to get to more lasting change, and again, I'm saying this from the counselor's perspective, knowing that coaching is, we talked about last time, like that triage, counseling is like, you need to go deeper.
Right.
That cognitive only goes so far, that you need integration with the body. So anything that we do in the context of validation is like, we're going to involve the body. I have had clients stand up, yell, kick stuff, push things. I mean, I involve the body as much as I can. Mm-hmm. And then it's the emotions. We need to process those emotions, because the three facts about emotions, that they're neither good or bad. Okay. Mm-hmm. They just are. They come in waves. Right. So you feel like you're anxious the whole time, but they do come in waves. So there's a hopefulness there. Mm-hmm. And the third principle is that emotions indicate a clue of what's going on inside. So when you're experiencing anger, when you experience sadness, it's not something to disregard, but to pay attention, which is why the question of, and the skill of needed, what are you noticing? What are you noticing? Mm-hmm. What are you noticing? Mm-hmm. Because that's going to give you a clue into, yep, I'm feeling tense in my chest. Must mean I'm anxious. Why am I anxious?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember feeling so blown away when I heard that emotions only last 90 seconds in your body if you don't egg them on. Hmm. Like if you just allow it to flow through and move past. And I was like, that can't be true. I've been angry for like 48 hours before. But it's all the other stuff that's making the anger like grow and like take over and influence, versus, you know, it's like you said, it's like all, like whether it's past trauma, big T or little T, or beliefs about yourself or anything. Yeah. Like there's so much more going on than just that surface level. But the surface level gives you a hint.
Yeah.
That there's more going on.
And you got to keep things in the perspective that, like, if you think of a triangle, you have emotions, you know, you have your emotions, your behaviors, and your thoughts. They all interwork with one another. Mm-hmm. And so, like, your thoughts are going to impact your emotions and behavior. Your behavior is going to impact your thoughts and your emotions, you know, and your, mm-hmm. you know, thoughts are going to, you know, they all impact one another. I'm getting confused. So A, that maybe more makes things more complex, because when I'm, like we said, that, yeah, you may be going in with the meeting with a cognitive perspective, like, okay, I'm confident, but if your body is stressed out, you're not going to get much. You're not going to go far. So you have to work with the behaviors. But that also is hopeful, because once, if you're stuck in one place, you know, I just get stuck on these thoughts and I can't, you know, especially with OCD, a lot of times I'm like, okay, we just can't use CBT. We just can't. A lot of times, that's not where I'll start. I'll start with exposure and giving yourself like that, let's say 5 minutes of don't do the thing. And when you're in that 5 minute, do a grounding exercise and teach your body to say, hey, it's okay, before we go into the cognitive processing. So there's always going to be different angles we can go at. And that's usually helpful, because if we're stuck in one area, we can address it from a different area.
I love that. That's awesome.
Nice.
Well, I think we're basically reached time here. Does anybody have any final thoughts?
Like the actual time, or like the
5 minutes? All right. Apparently, I have trauma around time. It's a list 5 minutes. My family used to talk about Elizabeth-sized pieces of cake, because I would get the biggest slice. So when they wanted a piece of cake, they'd be like, can I have a little Elizabeth-sized piece? And I was like, this is not a good legacy to leave behind. So now we have a Liz 5 minutes, which is everybody else's, that's, you know, fantastic. Hour. Okay. Oh, man. All righty. Well, I guess that's it. Unless Jake has any final thoughts. I feel like you were about to say something, Jake.
No, I was just, no, I was excited to do this and show you guys how it goes. Like I said, this is one way of therapy. If I would emphasize, it's just get a therapist that you trust to have a conversation with. And yeah, John, it was exciting getting to know a little bit what's going on. And again, I'm always intrigued by your reactions to all this.
Yeah. Well, thanks for doing this. And I'm glad something came to mind for today. So cool. Thanks for doing this.
Alrighty. So we will see you guys next week. I guess we have to come up with new topics since we finished our series here. We hope you enjoyed it. And please like, subscribe, follow us on Instagram. Tell us what you think. Leave reviews, all the things. We love to hear from you guys. And we will see you next time on Who You Gonna Call?